We'll call the meeting to order. Representative Hoppy moves the minutes of the, somebody give me the date, of the March 5th, 2009 meeting. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, motion carry. Thank you, Representative Hoppy. First up is House File 1048. This one did not come out of the... I don't see Representative Dabney. The chair will move that House File 1048 be recommended to pass and re-refer to the Committee on Higher Ed and Workforce Development, Finance, and Policy Division. Representative Breiner, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. House File 1048 extends unemployment benefits to workers with reduced hours who participate in targeted training through the WIRED federal grant program. This extension is offered as a variation of the shared work plan, which is in Minnesota statutes currently, Section 268-135. There are three major aspects to the bill, despite the fact it's only two paragraphs. I'll probably have two paragraphs here, but I'll be quick. The first is the experience of a high-technology business in the current economic downturn. It was that experience of one such company, VTech Incorporated in Mankato, a company that designs and manufactures component processing equipment, that became the initial impetus for this bill. The layoffs that accompany a business slowdown highlight the importance of high-tech workers and the team-building process to innovative economic development. This bill was a strategy to help protect some of those workers and the teams of which they are a part. The second element is the shared work plan, which was created in 1994 to reduce layoffs. Yeah. And the third is the WIRED program, which is a federal grant designed to build talent in rural Minnesota to support the renewable energy industry. We have Lee Nelson with us today to describe how the shared work program and WIRED come together in this proposal to support high-tech businesses such as VTech.
Thank you, Representative Bryan. Mr. Nelson, welcome back.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I am Lee Nelson. I'm the Director of Legal Affairs for the Unemployment Insurance Program. The department fully supports this bill. We work with the representative and on the Senate side to draft this bill to make it work. Right now, the current shared work program is not particularly very flexible. And this WIRED grant was just recently made available by the Department of Labor, I believe it's for $5 million. And that grant provides tuition and books and other things to businesses who have workers who would, like a day a week or 2 days a week, go to training to substantially increase their skills, which can strengthen that business because that business is having some financial problems. The shared work program may well fit many of those businesses, but may not. So we're simply seeking to waive some of the requirements in the current law to make the shared work program fit within the WIRED grant to make the WIRED grant a success. And it's a pilot program which will last for 2 years. We can see if it works. Hopefully it will. We want to make WIRED a success and strengthen and expand it. Currently it applies to, I believe it is 38 counties throughout Minnesota have the WIRED grant available to them. So this simply provides flexibility within the shared work program. So an individual could take training a couple days a week, a day or 2 days a week, and receive partial unemployment benefits for the lost wages they would have while they're in training. And I'd say the administration fully supports this this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Nelson. Are there Representative Breiner, any other comments?
We'll entertain any questions members might have.
Thank you, Representative Breiner. Is there anyone else who desires to testify with respect to the bill? Are there questions or comments, concerns from members of the committee? Seeing none, the chair will renew his motion that House File 1048 be recommended to pass and refer to the Committee on Higher Education, Workforce Development, Finance, and Policy. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, that motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Breiner.
Thank you,
Mr. Nelson.
Chair.
Representative Junkie's House File 841, we're just sending one of the pages for him. He's right across the street, so he'll be here momentarily, right across the hallway even. Well, heaven forbid that he should be at the Capitol. I could have saved the the meeting minutes or something to approve in the meantime, I guess. But
Mr. Chair, I actually did read the meeting minutes before I approved it.
And Representative Hoppe, that's why I asked for you to make the motion. Is
you are wise beyond your years.
You, I think, don't you read back copies of the minutes just to make sure that they're correct?
You know, oftentimes I do.
That's what it is.
Are we sufficiently killing enough time? Is Junkie here yet?
Well, not in a very entertaining fashion. Do we have all the amendments? The members, as Representative Junkie is coming down, for the sake of members, we've got a number of amendments to the next bill. These amendments are not to Representative Junkie's bill. We don't want Representative Junkie to have any sort of stroke on us either. But we'll have the pages pass those amendments out now so that we don't have to wait for them to be distributed while we're hearing the next bill. Representative Junkie's 841, the chair will move that House File 841 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Civil Justice. Representative Junkie, do
you Mr. Chair. This bill just simply changes the date on the back page, extends the sunset another 4 years. The farmer lender mediation bill that originated back in the 1980s, and every 3 or 4 years or so we extend the sunset and pass unanimously out of agriculture. We're working on some de minimis levels that we're going to talk about in ag finance eventually, but that's the bill.
Thank you, Representative Junkie. And it's my understanding that in the past, the extensions have either been 2 years or 4 years. Is that correct?
Usually whatever NRS wants. Fair enough. Always lose. We try and do whatever we want, and then we always lose when we go to the Senate. So.
Okay. But this one is a proposed four-year extension based on the amendment that was put on the last committee. I see one person that's asked to testify, Mr. Sinise from the University of Minnesota Extension Service, or is he...
No, he's just here to answer questions
okay.
if you have any.
And then the next question I have, is there anyone else that desires to testify with respect to the bill? The questions or concerns from members of the committee? Representative Mullins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, that's okay. Mr. Chair. I completely agree with the bill with the amendment. It was, as introduced, it would have been in violation of the Blaisdell decision on constitutionality, but with that it meets it. But the other issue is that in some committee there needs to be testimony to under the court decisions, there has to be testimony in one of the committees about the need and why there's an emergency situation right now. So I don't care if you've done it in the Ag Committee or if you're going to do it in another committee, just one of the three.
And Mr. Chair, we did have extensive testimony, lots of testifiers, farm groups and others, FLAG, farmer lender assistance, you know, all the groups were in Ag and gave full testimony.
So Representative Mullery, with that comment, does that satisfy the need for it to go to civil law? Does it no longer need to go to civil law?
Yes.
It does need to go to civil law.
No.
Okay. Are there other...
I will point out, Mr. Chair, to my knowledge, it's never been to that committee ever. So I just want that for the record. I've checked with the groups that have worked with this over the years, and other than the 1980s when it was first written, it's never gone to that committee. But we're happy to go.
You didn't sound very happy to go.
I'm not happy to go, but we will be happily going there. But again, it's never been there before. I want that on the record.
But when the record's transcribed, it'll say we're happy to go. And
that's right.
And that are there other questions or comments? Representative Mullery?
I didn't want to get into an argument, but it clearly goes there. Real estate law is clearly a civil law issue and a more moratorium on foreclosures is clearly real estate law. So.
And Mr. Chair,
thank you, Representative Mulery. Representative Junkie.
This is not a moratorium on foreclosures, Representative Mulery. This is farmer lender mediation, which most people don't even end up going through the mediation. It has nothing to do with a moratorium on foreclosures. It's a step in the process. So, again, we're happy to go there, Mr. Chair, but it's never been there before, so it's amazing that it survived this long in this state.
Thank you, Representative Junkie. Are there questions or concerns from any other members of the committee about whether it should go to civil law or otherwise? All right. Well, with that, the Chair will renew his motion that House File 841 be recommended to pass and refer to the Committee on Civil Justice. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Seeing none,
thank you,
motion
Mr.
prevails.
Chair.
Thank you, Representative Junkie. Good luck with your bill. Next up, Representative Hosh has House File 866. Representative Hosh will move that House File 866 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Health and Human Services Policy. Representative Hosh, it is my understanding that you have an A4 amendment that is an author's amendment that will put it in the shape with which the author would like to proceed.
Correct, Mr. Chair.
Representative Hosh moves the A4 amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, that motion prevails. The A4 amendment is now part of the bill. Representative Hosh, to your bill.
Okay, Mr. Chair, House File 866 is the statewide school employee insurance program that I think many of us are familiar with. Mr. Chair, I can either go through the bill line section by section, or if you'd like to move forward and have the testifiers, I'm fine either way.
Representative Hosh, what I would prefer is for you to give us maybe a Reader's Digest 1-minute version of what the bill does. And then we'll get some more detail from the testifiers.
Mr. Chair, House File 866 creates a health insurance pool for our school employees. They would be joining the public employee insurance program. Essentially, joining PEEP will allow for the administrative functions and the efficiencies that PEEP currently has to be applied to the school districts and the school employees for health insurance coverage. Under PEEP, there would be three different benefit sets that school districts could choose to participate in. That's the PEEP Advantage, which is your general full coverage, your Advantage Value, which is a high deductible plan, and an HSA plan called Advantage HSA. Also within this bill is a health improvement program to focus on the increased health and increased outcomes for individuals. So it's not just simply health insurance, but also trying to improve health of individuals. The committee that would be in charge of the plans and the structure of these plans would consist of 14 individuals. Seven people on the committee would be employee groups consisting of AFSCME, SEIU, and Education Minnesota. And the other seven, to have parity, would be appointed by the School Boards Association. All current regulations and requirements of health insurance plans, such as assessments for MCHA, would also be required for the school employees pool. That, Mr. Chair, is pretty much the general 30,000-foot overview of House File 866. I would encourage the committee's support, and thank you for your time.
And Representative Hosh, that's exactly what I was looking for when I wanted the Reader's Digest version. I assume we'll get additional detail from your testifiers. I see one smiling at me right now. Sir, if you can just identify yourself and proceed with the testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Tom Dewar. I'm president of Education Minnesota, the statewide educators union, and I want to thank you for the opportunity to speak with you today. I'm here today to urge your support for House File 866, creating a statewide school employee health insurance pool. I represent 70,000 educators across the state, and educators are suffering through nothing less than a full-blown health care crisis. Of course, we know that educators are not alone, but the difference is this is one crisis you can help fix. We absolutely agree with the governor that Minnesota should be doing everything possible to save money by becoming more efficient and not duplicating efforts. This is a reform with the potential to save significantly more money for Minnesota school districts and taxpayers than the pooling of purchasing of office supplies. It provides administrative efficiencies, economy of scale, purchasing power, and negotiating leverage of a large pool. This is a tested and well-proven plan that we know will work for employees and employers. It's modeled after the State Employee Insurance Group program, which you as legislators are in. And for all employees in Minnesota, both public and private, the average premium has been going up 10-12% each year. But for CGIP, the premium experience has been significantly below that for the past 4 years, while maintaining benefit levels. So why is this bill needed now? Healthcare costs are creating a huge burden on school districts and on hardships of employees. Cost spikes in several school districts have reached 30 to 50% in 1 year. In Pine River Bacchus, they just received a premium increase of over 50%. So they now have a $5,000 individual deductible and a $10,000 family deductible. That's like having no insurance at all, but still costing the district a lot of money. In my home school district of Robbinsdale, the past few years they've had over 30% increases for 2 years in a row. Some employees actually write a check to the school district every 2 weeks to come to work because the cost exceeds their salary. School employees are not only paying more, but they're seeing significant reductions in their coverage. At a time when every education dollar absolutely has to stretch as far as possible, we cannot afford to waste money in this way. Here are the advantages of the bill. It takes advantage of negotiating and purchasing power of a large pool of over 200,000 people. It helps prevent cost spikes while providing stability and predictability in premiums. School districts can retain control, and employers and unions would still bargain choice of plans and the share of premiums and who is eligible to participate. This bill has been changed to address the concerns and questions that have arisen over the past 2 years. It's modeled on the successful and familiar state employee insurance program. It's administered by the same contractors as CGIP, allowing us to take advantage of the same low administrative fees. Many choices are in this program for the employers and the employees, and lower costs than the previous proposal because we don't have to build the plan from the ground up. I would submit to you that this is the right bill at the right time for Minnesota. Please give it your support, and I would take any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Dewar. And I think what we'll do for now is hold off on the questions until we've got all the testimony, and then we'll see if there's follow-up questions that people have. Thank you very much. The next person that I have on the list is Ms. Place, Lee Johansson. Mr. Johansson, welcome back.
Mr. Chair, I'll just answer questions here.
All right. Thank you. I also have Josh Whitney-Wise from SEIU. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Josh Whitney-Wise. I'm here on behalf of SEIU Local 284, which represents school support staff across the state. I'll be brief. Mr. Dewar addressed a lot of the same concerns that we have. Our members have seen double-digit increases in their health care premiums in each of the last 4 years. We have members who are spending the majority of their paycheck on health insurance. And hopefully, as this bill comes up in other committees, we'll have some of them come in and talk to you about what it's doing to their families. The state has a real opportunity here to improve the lives of Minnesotans. And we really hope that you take full advantage of it. Anything else I had to say has already been covered. I'll stand for questions if there are any.
Thank you. I wish all testifiers would do that.
Sure.
But. Thank you very much, and I think we will hold off on questions until we get all the testimony. Next on the list, I have Grace Kelleher from the Minnesota School Board Association. Welcome back.
Thank you, Mr. Kim and members. My name is Grace Kelleher, and I represent the Minnesota School Boards Association. We have multiple concerns about this bill. First and foremost, I want to point out to you that any employee that presently doesn't receive coverage will not receive coverage under this bill. It doesn't provide coverage for anyone new. That is locally bargained, and this bill does not change that. There are no savings identified. If you can remember back to 2001 when we studied this, we were really looking for savings where we could still provide the employee quality we were looking for. That does not come through here. We know even less now than we have in the past on this bill. We've looked, this bill does not even address cash and lieu provisions, but it oftentimes leaves very few employees in their health plan pool and aggregate costs. Last but not least, in this bill, present school districts and employees would be responsible for covering any loss by this newly formed company. That loss presently now is covered by either where the school districts are self-insured or with the service co-op, and they have reserves there that protect school districts from catastrophic loss. And I should share with you that one time the Minnesota School Boards Association had sponsored a statewide pool for health insurance. We were 125% at reserve amounts and did follow the law carefully. Unfortunately, the reserves, in the end, we decided to close it because we couldn't make any money. We couldn't make it fly. And we ended up having to come up, even at 125% of funding, with $8 million to cover additional claims. So this is an easy business and certainly nothing we take lightly. With that, Mr. Chairman, I'll conclude my remarks. I'll be happy to answer questions.
Thank you very much, Ms. Kelleher. Next on the list that I have is Paul Bourgeois. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. And then Catherine Komet. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Executive Director of Finance and Operations with Minnetonka Public Schools. We're a member of AMSD, and I'm here in response, representing the issue of the mandatory requirements. We happen to have we're self-insured for health insurance, and it's a pool that has worked very well for us, even with our small group of 2,300 lives. But the reason it's worked is because we've operated this pool in a collegial manner with all employees of the district, all the employee bargaining groups, all the people who are not part of bargaining groups, up and down the line. We have a committee that oversees the benefit levels and the options. We have, since in the last 7 years, our premium history has been as follows: a 5.5% increase in 02, 03, 4% increase in 03, 04, 0% in 04, 05, 3% average increase in 05, 06, 3.5 in 06, 07, 5% in 07, 08, 3% in 08, 09. For 09, 10, we're looking at a 0% increase. There are models out there that work. By shoehorning us into a particular model, we feel that there's not necessarily going to be an opportunity for us to exercise our ability to really manage our care. The other important point is we do have the same level of issues that everybody else have. We've had serious cancers. We've had, you know, the heart diseases, all those things in our group. So it's not that we've been lucky. We've had all the same things that have happened, but we ask you to allow us to continue to maintain our choice to be able to be self-insured. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Komet. Welcome back.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do have a handout for the committee members. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Catherine Komet, and I represent the Minnesota Council of Health Plans, which is an association that represents the 8 nonprofit health plans in the state of Minnesota. And let me just begin my remarks by saying that this bill is an improved proposal from the bills we've seen in the past. PEEP is a working option in the marketplace already. However, we still have some concerns about House File 866 from a fairness perspective. We would like to see PEEP and other state-sponsored health plans like CDIP pay their fair share of the state taxes and assessments imposed on the fully insured market. As you know, state regulators and policymakers can only reach 27% of the market in Minnesota due to a shrinking fully insured market. And what I've passed out to you is a copy of the graphs, the pie charts that we often share with this committee and the Health and Human Services Committee. But you'll see at the top pie chart is a snapshot of where Minnesotans used to get where they got their health insurance back in 1993. And back then, 40% of the market, roughly 40% of the market, was in a fully insured product. About 30% was in a self-funded plan. And then you fast forward to 2005, and this is the latest data that we have from the Department of Health. And it shows that those two numbers have actually switched. So the fully insured market is now at 27% of the market, and private self-insured plans represent 40% of the market. That is a huge shift. And so I just want to make sure that people understand when I'm talking about 27% of the market, it is a shrinking portion of the market, and the tax treatment in this bill, it will have an impact on that 27% of the market. In fact, on the back side of your handout is a copy of a tax chart, and this reflects what a typical small employer or an individual policyholder might pay under an HMO product. They pay a 1% premium tax, a little bit different than if you purchase an indemnity product. That's the middle bar graph, and that's the indemnity carriers pay a 2% premium tax, and so their taxes are a little bit higher. But you'll see that on both in both of those two bars, they also pay the EMSA assessment, which this year, or for 2008, is going to be is estimated at about 2.42% of premium, which I think is probably one of the highest I've ever seen it. And then, so I would say that under this, the little tiny bar at the bottom, at the far right, that's where it says large employers, the self-insured, that's the same kind of tax treatment that PEEP and CGIP will are currently enjoy today. So they don't pay those taxes. And I know this bill makes a few adjustments to that. As I mentioned, under this proposal, many school districts that currently pay the EMSA assessment and other premium taxes would only pay a portion of the EMSA assessment. So it, in the bill, it talks about how they'd only pay. If some districts are paying now, they would continue to pay, but if other districts weren't paying, they would not pay. So it doesn't, I want to be sure everyone understands that not every single district that goes into this pool will pay the EMSA, the full EMSA assessment. As a result, this shifts the rest of the EMSA burden to the remaining small employers and individuals in the fully insured market, which would be unfair and increase the cost of their health insurance premiums. So if this bill is enacted, we question whether the PEEP program will need some additional dollars. There are approximately 200,000 lives in the 341 school districts, that, and they generate about $1 billion in claims per year. This newly expanded group will need to be well-funded to cover their claims. The PEEP program currently is exempt from chapters 60A, 62A, 62C, 62D, 62E, and 62H, and it says that right in the bill. Many of these chapters deal with health insurance mandates and provider mandates and that sort of thing. Now, it's assumed that PEEP covers new mandated benefits, but we know of one specific exclusion that PEEP doesn't cover and CGIP doesn't cover, and it's unclear as to whether PEEP will cover additional mandates going forward. This bill does nothing, does absolutely nothing to achieve any real savings in health care costs. Pooling does not lower health care costs. The only way to lower health care costs is to address health care cost drivers. And this proposal does not address the drivers of health care costs, which include increases in utilization, negotiated rates with providers, technology, inefficiencies in the system, aging population, and lifestyles, such as exercise, diet, smoking, etc. Instead, this proposal merely shifts money around, creating marginal improvements for some small districts, while forcing large districts, many of which have successfully employed market reforms to bring their health care costs under control, and forcing them to pay more in health care costs. And so, in order to provide fairness for all of Minnesota's school employees, we believe the bill should be changed as follows. And we think that it should include all the consumer protections afforded to all other citizens in the state of Minnesota, including a complaint system as required in statute. So that would be requiring the school employee insurance plan to follow all of the mandates. And provide we think that they should also provide the same level of benefits and mandates required by a fully insured product regulated by the Department of Commerce and the Department of Health. They should provide the same level of quality assurance and quality improvement requirements as a licensed insurer. They should pay the full assessment required of contributing members to the Minnesota Comprehensive Health Association. And they should pay all of the premium taxes. As I indicated in this bar chart, all of the premium taxes, including the MA surcharge and other taxes, like other taxed entities under the fully insured plan. So these concerns apply to PEEP today. I want to be clear that it's not something that's new. We have these concerns about PEEP today. What's different is that we think these concerns need to be addressed if 200,000 new lives are forced into this program. So with that, I'll be happy to answer any questions if you have any.
Thank you, Ms. Kmit.
Thank you.
Next up, I have Mr. Skaczynski and then Mr. Brinkman. or Mr. Brinkman, and then Mr. Straczynski. Whatever order you all want to... Welcome to the committee. If you'd just identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, my name is Bill Straczynski, and I'm representing here the interests of the service cooperative throughout the state of Minnesota. With me is Mr. Brinkman. I'd just like to make a couple of comments initially, Mr. Chairman, and be available to answer questions or what have you. To understand the structure of the service cooperatives, the service cooperatives were created by the Minnesota legislature years ago, 25 years ago, in fact, we've been doing this business. At one time, we provided funding for the service cooperatives on a regional basis and said, but many years ago, 10 years ago, in fact, you said, go forward and be profitable. If you can do a good job of shared services without state appropriation, you're successful. Go right ahead and do it. And we're here to tell you that we've been doing that for a number of years under shared services, and insurance is something we got into and we figured out how to do it successfully, again, on a voluntary basis. In fact, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to observe to Mr. Davids, when he carried this legislation a number of years ago, that we've added 100 groups to our service cooperative pool since that time. In fact, they've been more popular on a voluntary basis. I'll let Mr. Brinkman talk about specifics of this legislation, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Brinkman. Mr. Chairman, members, thank you for your time this afternoon. My name is Paul Brinkman, currently with the Northeast Service Cooperative in Mountain Iron. Prior to this job, I worked for 10 years in healthcare, where I continue to serve today as president of the Virginia Regional Medical Center, which is a voluntary position. I also served as a local school board member in Virginia from 1987 to 2002, including one term as state president of the Minnesota School Boards Association in 2001. I'm here today in opposition to House File 866. In general, this proposed purchasing mandate offers nothing new to address the real cost drivers in healthcare. It ignores a proven record of shared services through the Minnesota Service Cooperative, and it permanently shifts more than $1 billion in risk from local governments, including service cooperatives, to the state of Minnesota. This new purchasing mandate offers nothing new to address the actual cost drivers in the system, although pooling arrangements can make a difference, and ours has worked well historically. This proposal offers no new solutions and provides no details that would address the real cost drivers in healthcare, which include utilization, plan design, premium contribution levels, and bad practices such as single plus one, unfunded liabilities, and cash in lieu. In fact, when you read this bill closely and listen to the testimony of Education Minnesota, this legislation doesn't require school districts to offer coverage, and it certainly doesn't require employees to take any offered coverage. The legislation does nothing to increase district contributions, which would help bring more teachers into the group. Moreover, the districts mentioned that don't offer coverage aren't required to do so under the bill. And the reason they don't offer coverage is that their employee groups, their unions, agreed to the collective bargaining process to drop coverage. Also, this new purchasing mandate ignores a state model for shared services available to the Minnesota Service Cooperative. In reality, the service cooperatives offer a proven record of successful shared services, all on a voluntary basis. We're voluntary in legislation. Historically, we have been more cost-effective than PEEP and other pooled programs in the state. For example, in rural Minnesota, many of our groups are not even rateable on their own. They have limited resources at their disposal. Using standard underwriting guidelines and leveraging various local, regional, and state resources, we help make it work. But don't take our word for it. Just look at the record. Over the past few years, teachers from 57 school districts have sought alternate quotes from PEEP. To date, not one has left us. Let me reiterate this point. Teachers, through their collective bargaining representatives, have the statutory authority in Section 43A.316, Subdivision 5, to join PEEP without the consent of management. To date, none of the 57 groups seeking PEEP bids have left their current arrangement, and that includes the St. Paul School District teachers, who last fall voted 2-1 against joining PEEP. Finally, this new mandate permanently shifts over $1 billion in risk from local governments, including service cooperatives, to the lap of the state of Minnesota. As proposed, the bill does not trump local collective bargaining, a Minnesota tradition that is highly valued by our members. As a result, intended or not, local cost drivers will remain in place while new escalating costs and liabilities shift to the state of Minnesota. As drafted, the proposal needs to be analyzed to determine what extent it puts Minnesota taxpayers further at risk, and what is the state's capacity to begin bailing out local school districts for unfunded liabilities, such as other post-employment benefits. In short, House File 866 offers nothing new to address the actual cost drivers in health care. It ignores a proven record of shared services, and it would permanently shift more than $1 billion in risk to the state of Minnesota. In contrast, today, service cooperatives administer competitive, voluntary, shared insurance services for 672 schools, cities, counties, and other public agencies across the state of Minnesota. We appreciate your ongoing support of our work. Thank you for your time today, and we're here to answer any questions you may have. Thank you,
Thank
Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Brinson.
And Mr. Chairman, I also believe we have a hand
They're just making copies right now, and it'll get to us.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, thank you. I think the handout basically deals with what the service cooperative has been doing, our pooling strategies, why it works so effectively now. We do insure 243 school districts today in Minnesota on a voluntary basis, as well as 60 counties belong to our service cooperative pools, and over 300 cities and other governmental units. We insure a lot of folks, again, on a voluntary basis. We'll talk about that, but the handout does deal with our statewide strategy. We've identified the school districts as well, and I think some of you will see this is the information we've gotten as we've compared ourselves to PEEP, and this is what's happened in the last 2 years. Collective bargaining units have gone out to PEEP. PEEP insures 1,400 different contracts, individual employees, where the service cooperatives currently in our groups we cover are 54,500. So there's just a dramatic difference there. And the next part of the handout will be the number of groups that belong, employee groups that belong to PEEP currently is 73. I think that's off their website we got. And we currently have 672 employee groups belonging to our service cooperative pool. And again, we pool our funds and we are pooled on a statewide basis. I think what this really shows you, in fact, this is where we've added 100 groups in the past 2 years, since 2005, to our service cooperative. Again, on a voluntary basis, people can walk with their feet. If they don't like our insurance bid, they can get it. And I think it's telling. It's concerns we all have is, number one, if this bill becomes law, we go out of business, number one. I think we do a pretty good job. But more importantly, I think what happens is you're taking a system that's there, it's created by the Minnesota legislature, PEEP, taking a program that exists today, well, we competed with them 57 times in the last 2 years. Now you're mandating not just those 57 groups, but everybody else into that new state employee, public employee pool. And again, I think it's really important to emphasize and understand at the end of the day that the reserve levels they have to have and the shift. Currently, the service cooperatives are the ones that are liable for claims and reserves and what have you. The tax burden is not on the local school district taxpayers whatsoever. It rests with the service cooperatives. This legislation now shifts it to the taxpayers, not the local taxpayers. It shifts it to the state taxpayers. If you've got to come up with $250 million worth of reserves to start it, I don't know where that comes from. And you're not changing practices. Retirees can still belong and negotiate at the local level. Retirees still belong and can be in these pools. They are out there in greater Minnesota because that's negotiated for at the local bargaining level. Your state employee insurance group program that you belong to, all of you here as members of the legislature, do not allow employee retirees to stay in your pool. They have to go on Medicare. That's not so in some of these collective bargaining contracts. That all just shifts. That's where the adverse selection comes from, and the costs become even more enormous. Anyhow, Mr. Chairman, that's basically it, and I think you'll get the handouts. And we did provide an article, copy of the article about statewide, about teachers in St. Paul last December or October voting down the going into PEEP on a 2-to-1 basis. Membership. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Straczynski. Thank you, Mr. Brinkman. Is there anyone else that, for whatever reason, didn't get on the list ahead of time that desires to testify with respect to this bill? Yes, sir. Oh, and I'm sorry. Are you Mr. Fenton?
Yes.
You were on the list. I just couldn't read my own writing. I apologize. Come on down. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you.
Pretty simple. You just identify who you are and proceed with your testimony.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Thank you, committee members. My name is Dennis Fentz. I want to speak from the teacher perspective. I'm not an insurance person. I'm not a business person. I'm a teacher of 30 years in the state of Minnesota. I'm from North St. Paul Maplewood Oakdale. I was the teacher union president for the past 6 years. I currently serve as the North St. Paul Maplewood Oakdale teacher vice president at this time, also on the district insurance committee, negotiating committees, and so forth. So I think I can provide you a pretty adequate teacher perspective of what we're looking at. So again, thank you very much, Chair. First of all, let me say that I do appreciate your very good intention, but in terms of this bill, I have some very serious concerns that I would like to call to your attention. This bill would mandate 2,000 lives into PEEP, which currently insures only 4,000 lives. That seems to me to be a monumental task to move up to. It certainly is a great deal more than PEEP could take on in its current form. So maybe we're considering totally revamping PEEP, but certainly moving from 2,000 lives to 204,000 lives is a monumental difference. Moving from insuring 4,000 lives to insuring 204,000 lives may make PEEP one of those institutions that recently has come to be referred to as too big to be allowed to fail. Now, and fail, it certainly may happen if this happens, because we already know, as you've heard from other speakers, that the question of joining PEEP was voted on by St. Paul teachers just this fall, with the answer being a resounding no. We also know that last year, somewhere between 50 and 60 teacher locals went to PEEP, asked for bids. After they received the bids, not a single one accepted the bids or actually moved to PEEP. One has to wonder then, what's up with the teachers in St. Paul? What's up with these other 55 locals? What's up with PEEP's bids, or maybe its plan design? Lots of good questions, very few answers at this time. Although I come to oppose this bill at this time, what I really would like to do is ask all of you as legislators to say, if we have an issue here, and I don't think anyone denies we have an issue with insurance in Minnesota or in the nation, but having an issue does not correlate with mandating 200,000 lives into PEEP. Where is the research? Where is the data? How do we know that we aren't simply making things worse? How do our people out in the field know that this is the best proposition? At any rate, if this plan does become too big to fail, does that then mean that the state of Minnesota provides the bailout if it does not, in fact, stay on course? So one also may wonder what the state would need, why they would need to mandate all of these people into PEEP, when right now every single local has the freedom, which if you ask me would be the preferable way, every single local has the freedom to join PEEP on their own if they choose, a much preferable way. One last thing, because I value your time, I just want to address a little bit the topic of teacher information on this entire topic, teacher willingness or desire to join PEEP. I did a little informal survey, and granted, very informal, but in my own district, asking teachers if they ever heard of PEEP and just what maybe they knew about PEEP. I got two definitive types of answers. Number one, the vast majority have never, ever heard of PEEP. Second answer, those who have thought it was a type of candy that we see a great deal of at Easter time. With that, again, I will close. I thank you for your time, and again, just ask for sincere, serious deliberation of data, prospects, plan design, premium costs, so that teachers in the field can see them in advance maybe we could even have a review and comment after that data is collected. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Fent. Appreciate your thoughtful comments. Is there anyone else that desires to testify with respect to the bill? Representative Hosh, you got any wrap-up comments? We do have a number of amendments, so if we can be...
Sure, Mr. Chair, thank you again for your consideration. Just to address a few things, I want to clarify that this proposal is based on the CGIP plan that we have, the employee group insurance plan that we're all members of. However, we're joining PEEP because of the ease of joining, creating its own pool, and for using its administrative efficiencies. The stability and the stability in rates within the CGIP plan have been great. Right along the lines of the gentleman from the Minnetonka School District who stated their rate increases. As you know, just this year, public employees were able to receive a benefit card because of the reduction in increased premiums. That is what we're modeling this plan after. When you talk about, such as Minnetonka, where they insure 2,300 lives, I could only wish that my district that I represent has those same numbers. But the fact of the matter is many, many districts do not have those numbers that can provide the stability and the consistency in premiums throughout the state of Minnesota. And I think it's extremely important, whether now or into the future, that we have a plan that gives the fiscal footing to school districts to have the consistency and the flexibility the consistency, the flexibility, and the ability to be able to have persistent and stable premiums when they go to the negotiating table. This plan, although PEEP is different than CGIP, is based on CGIP while joining PEEP and making a mandatory plan that would create that consistency that we need. I also have individual Lee Johansson that can answer any detailed questions, who is a much greater expert than I could be.
Well, we've got a number of amendments before us. I think we can let the discussion flow from the amendments. Are there Representative Zellers and then Representative Hoppe?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just a couple of questions that probably either lead maybe not to offering amendments to the table. The number one issue, Representative Hosh, that we've heard from the bill this year, last year, the year before, the testifiers have brought up is where the reserves come from. Because my fear is that the exact opposite is what's going to happen. The teachers aren't going to see the savings. There's no reserves there. They're going to have to be built from somewhere. So the very first thing after enactment that's going to happen is you're going to go to the teachers and say, we got to add $400 or $500 to your health care bill because it's for the greater good. How can you explain to us where these reserves are going to come from? Again, if PEEP's not going to bail it, I mean, we're adding 200,000 people here. Last year the number we had was $250 million, I think it was $200 million that we'd have to have day one, cash check. So, how is this different this year than last year?
Representative Hosh or
Mr. Chair, Representative Zeller, the reserving of a self-insured pool at its start is done through a combination of buying stop-loss insurance at a low attachment point, so that the risk that's assumed by the pool is less in its initial years. And then adding a bit of a surcharge onto the premiums to build the reserves over a 2 or 3 year period. This is the exact same way that the CGIP plan was started a few years back. It started out without any reserves. It built the reserves and in fact has become stable. It is the exact same method that in fact I suggest every self-insured pool, both public and private, has used. There has not been, and I've done considerable research on this, there has not been a single instance that I've been able to identify in which a self-insured pool was required to have 100% reserve on day one. If that was the case, nobody could go into it. But in fact, the long-term savings and stability are achieved, and the reserve is arrived at. So I think that through standard normal operating procedures, the reserve is built, and as it's built, then you increase the attachment point of your stop loss so that the pool is now taking up more risk as it's reserved more completely. And as you get to a mature pool, then your stop loss can be considerably increased.
Thank you, Mr. Johansson. Representative Ellis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well,
The pad bit is the part that worries me. I mean, what is it going to be? We can't. We're going to put into to law here an insurance pool for 200,000 people. No offense, but I don't think a pad bit is something that our teachers, especially in my school districts, are willing to bet on that kind of a.
Mr. Chair, Representative Zeller.
Representative Johansson.
Currently, reserves fluctuate up and down, and under current arrangements, there's money that goes into reserves on a regular basis. This is an ongoing issue with all self-insured pools. So it's not all new money. I mean, there's currently a reserve fund for District X might have been dropped, so they gotta put a little bit more money into the reserve. So it's an ongoing thing in current arrangements where reserves are being built and then spent down and being built and spent down. And so we don't believe that that's a different program than what we would do in the initial building. I cannot give you an exact dollar amount because, very honestly, we don't know what the claims history will be until we gather all of that data together and crunch the number and then come up with the premiums. But it is a proven, workable system throughout this state and throughout the United States for building self-insured pools.
Representative Ellis?
Well, again, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Johansson, I understand in an existing system that whatever the reserve build, either if you build your reserve beyond what you need, then yes, that can be a reduction. But we're talking about what I'd like to know is the actual number or ballpark number, a percentage. We've heard anywhere from 7 to 10 to 12% on the initial bill, and that's the question I'm trying to get for the teachers in my district and around the state, is that what's their initial, because everybody's been promised $200 and $300 a month savings. So we're coming up with numbers on the one side of savings, but we're not able to come up with a number, here's what it's going to cost you for the first 5 years, and then how many years it will take. And I understand that you have to assess the pool risk before you can give a number, but this is our third year at at this bill. Different plan now. Now we're going to go to Pete. Yeah, no offense to the former chair. I probably shouldn't have said that. I'll fly it over a little bit. Other authors have tried, but at least I didn't say it was a better plan this year than. I don't know, Mr. Chair. The initial build number is what I'm looking at, and if we've done this before. I mean, you've got an idea, the number keeps coming up, we hear it in the emails we get, the advertisements, this is how many people are going to save the insurance. You've got to be able to at least have a number if we're going to come and put this plan, even a ballpark number.
Thank you, Representative Villers. Mr. Johansson, you care to reply?
Yeah, I can't offer any more enlightenment than what I have. I think the actual dollar figures will be built. I think that there's disagreement within the insurance community as far as what the optimum percent of reserves are. I've heard all sorts of figures myself, whether it's a 25% reserve or a 7% reserve. Fact is that you have to assess your risk and then establish an orderly system of developing a reserve that's based on what that assessed risk is. And it would be great if we had a crystal ball, but it would be disingenuous of me if I were to give you a figure looking into that crystal ball, because under the best of circumstances, it's not clear.
Villers, anything further?
Well, yeah, but I'll defer to Representative Hoppe.
That's a little scary. Representative Hoppe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Would Mr. Bourgeois be able to come down and ask a question? I see he's got his coat on. I wanted to grab him before he got out of here.
Trying to beat the snow. Why don't you speak to your question?
I will do that.
He's working his way down.
While he's coming down, in the interest of full disclosure, my wife is an employee of the Minnetonka School District. But I wanted to ask him not a Minnetonka-specific question, but a metropolitan area, a metropolitan school district question. If this bill passes, is this going to raise costs for teachers in metropolitan area school districts?
Mr. Bourgeois?
I might have to defer to Mr. Kroonquist, but I know for our district it will. Metropolitan, all of them, I can't give you an answer on that, but I know for our district we're pretty sure that it will.
Okay, thank you. Representative Hoppe?
All right. A number of people have said that this bill won't lower health care costs. and I'm asking kind of the same thing, but very broadly, without talking about specific teachers or districts, is this going to raise costs?
Ms. Bergeron, for your district anyway, do you have a sense?
For our district, we believe that it will raise costs because our premiums are pretty well set. We're looking at a 0% increase. More than likely, if we have to get a premium cost from Pete, it's not going to be the same level that we currently have. So the other thing is we have the variety of choice that we have also for our retirees is also a big piece of what we do with self-insurance. We have a significant retiree component, and they can go live in Florida or Arizona, and they're taken care of. So we believe that it is going to go up. We haven't done a detailed analysis, but we just had a very successful model with very modest premium increases, and that's why I came to testify to try to make sure that we have the option where we're doing things right to be able to continue to do things right.
Thank you, Mr. Birchwell. Representative Hoppe. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Could I ask Mr. Dewar a couple of questions?
He's coming on down.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'll ask while he's walking. Mr. Dewar, one of the things you said is that this bill will save money. Won't some teachers, won't some of your union members lose money because of this bill?
Mr. Dewar.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hoppe, I did not say that. We talked about cost efficiency and that we're going to level off premium spikes. But that is not a question that we can answer right now.
Representative Hoppe?
Well, with all due respect, I think we can answer it. I mean, your union members, I've had email from a number of teachers, not just from Minnetonka or Chaska, but other districts around, and they seem to feel that they're going to be losing money if this bill passes.
Mr. Dewar?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hoppe, that's just not a question that's answerable. And so for people to have that's just misinformation out there. We have to put the pool together, we have to assess the risk, and we have to find out what that would be. And when you look at other people saying that 55 districts went out for bid and didn't take PEEP, that's because they were basing it on a smaller group. You put 200,000 lives, that's going to be a lot different pooling than it is. In St. Paul, when they voted it down, they didn't have all the accurate information from PEEP, and we're not going to PEEP, we're mirroring CGIP, which is what you have, and we are administering it through PEEP.
Representative Hoppe.
One more, Mr. Chair. Mr. Dewar, you said that some employees write a check every 2 weeks to come to work?
Mr. Chair, Representative
Dewar.
That's absolutely true.
Okay. So
Representative Hoppe.
Mr. Chair and Mr. Dewar, so we have teachers in Minnesota that lose money by coming to work every year.
We have support professionals. I don't know there are teachers, but we have support professionals that do.
Representative Anderson?
Thank you.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've got a couple of questions. One of them might be for Grace Kelleher. I don't know if I still see her here or not on the School Boards Association. But the first one I can ask here of Representative Haas, I'm looking at the bill on page 3, and it's line 22, and it says it's the appointment of the different folks on the board, the School Employee Insurance Committee. And it says 4 shall be appointed by Education Minnesota. Is that the executive board of Ed Minnesota? Is that, the rank and file members? Who is that?
Representative Hosh.
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, I believe that would be the executive board of Education Minnesota.
Mr. Anderson, you...
Education Minnesota leadership has a process for making selections, and the selections would be from, a broad array of our membership, but the actual decision would be headed up by our president and our Constitution and bylaws about how we appoint representatives.
Representative Anderson?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Johansson, I guess I'm not familiar. So does the entire rank and file ever get a chance to kind of give a recommendation then to that board, or how does that work? How do your bylaws work as far as how that goes?
Mr. Johansson?
Mr. Chair, our bylaws obviously don't reflect the Minnesota School Employees Insurance Board as such, but we have a democratic process whereby all of our locals elect delegates to a representative convention, and they are the decision-making governing body of our organization, governed under Landrum Griffin and all of the appropriate laws. So yes, we are a representative democracy in the way we go about doing our business.
Representative Anderson.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Johansson, and forgive me for getting into the details, and you'll see my point here later on as I get into it, but So when they elect the delegates, is that based, is that weighted based upon, you know, populations of different school districts, or how does that work?
Mr. Johansson?
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, I don't claim to be a particular expert on our Constitution, other than that I know that every one of our local unions is eligible to have at least one representative at our convention, and then they're appropriated according to the size of the membership of each local beyond that. But I don't know the numerical breakdown of exactly what qualifies for a second one or a third one or whatever. But it's representative of the size of our locals after each one receives one representative.
Okay, great.
And Representative Anderson, if you just want to tell us your point, you don't have to
oh,
do
I'm
it
sorry.
Through the
well,
witness.
I'm curious. I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. Is Grace Kelleher still in the room? Or?
Okay. She's coming on down. If you want to share your question as she's approaching
well, I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. It's along the same lines. I was just asking Mr. Johansson, and I see the other seven members of the School Employee Insurance Committee, they will be appointed by the Minnesota School Boards Association. And so I'd like to know, too, how you guys handle that. How would you handle as far as who's appointed to this board? Is it, you know, based upon, you know, yeah, school district population, you know, how many, how does that work?
Ms. Kelleher?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Anderson, the language is not specific on that. We are serving on many memberships of the State High School League, a significant others who are normally appointed board members. We have a board of directors that is elected from our membership from certain regions across the state. I think we represent every school district in the state of Minnesota, so we certainly have the grassroots to pull the right people together. But I don't have any clear cut. I think my board of directors would try to choose a representative population so they could do quality work. But it's difficult with something that's this intricate to say board members are going to be able to do the kind of job they want. I mean, this is heavy hitting, and it's not easy stuff. And I can't give you any more clarity than what I know by reading the bill.
Thank you, Ms. Kelleher.
Thank you.
Representative Anderson?
Wait, see what my point is. Is, you know, I come from four school districts that I represent. I've got Hopkins, Osseo, and Robbinsdale. And, you know, all those, three of the four of those school districts are very opposed to this legislation, the fact that it is mandatory. And they carry a large population of people. And I just feel like their voice is just being drowned out in this situation. And I'm just concerned that they are not going to have representation when it comes to this issue in the end. And I just feel like they're getting this rammed down their throat, and it's going to actually cost them more in the end. You heard from Mr. Bourgeois, and my school district was here, you know, 2 years ago or a year ago, you know, voicing their concern and opposition to this bill. And I just feel like we're trying the same thing over and over again. I think, what did you say? How did you say trying this? Do the same thing over and over again and getting the same results, but still doing it, or something to that effect. I can't remember. But anyway, those are just my concerns, and just hope that maybe, you know, as this bill moves forward, you look at that piece to make sure that there is appropriate representation for these folks, that they have a voice somewhere along in this process.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. Representative Dabney and Lily, I see, and Sanders. We are in my own little world of guidelines, in my own head that I don't announce to anybody. We're going to start voting on amendments here. And Representative Zellers, do you intend to offer, you know, which amendments you intend to offer?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
How many are there?
Situation is fluid, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Zellers. Representative Dabney, quickly.
Question for Mr. Pender.
Ms. Pender, or Representative Dabney, your question, then Ms. Pender.
I had understood this to be about a bill about bringing school employees into the PEEP program. When Mr. Dewar was up there, he indicated, if I understood him, that they actually were going into the CGIP program, but it was being administered by PEEP, at which point I don't understand why you would do that, but that's a different question. I'm not finding any reference in the bill to CGIP, but I don't claim to understand all of the statutory references. Can you enlighten me, please, Mr. Pender?
Mr. Pender, as briefly as possible, please.
Mr. Chair and Representative Dabney, the existing PEEP statute, most of which isn't
shown in this bill because it isn't being changed, instructs the, well, it was DUER, now it's MMB, to model the PEEP program on the CGIP program. So I think that's the basis for that statement, that it's supposed to be as close. The language in the existing law is something like it's supposed to be as much like the CGIP program as is possible or something like that.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dabney. Then, Mr. Pender, it's not going into the same pool, but presumably the administration and the product line would be similar. Is that what I'm to understand? Mr. Pender.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dabney, yes.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was wondering if Mr. Dewar might be able to come down again.
Mr. Dewar, can you share your questions as he's coming down?
Well, I just want to, Mr. Dewar, I'm a union member myself, and, you know, I'm glad to see you're fighting for union members. I think being a union leader is probably one of the toughest jobs on the planet. You know, I noticed the union, I'm not a union leader at Northwest, but I watch them and they get smacked around pretty good with all these different questions, kind of like being a legislator, but do you make what we make, sir?
I don't think so.
Okay, fair enough. I just want to mention that I really value the teachers of Minnesota across the state, and, you know, I think they have a very tough job and a very important role that they're doing. I was just wondering if you could just briefly explain to me why an optional system wouldn't work. Why do you have to have every teacher in Minnesota? Because it seems like it would work if you were to miss a few school districts, or you could create a pool that could be successful. And so I was just wondering, Mr. Dewar, if you might have an answer to that question, sir.
Sure. Mr. Dewar? It's based on research that we've done, that voluntary pools fail and mandatory pools work, because then everyone goes into it. Like the pool that you're in with CGIP, everyone has to go into it. It's mandatory. That's the same premise. We've just done research. It's not that we want to be telling people how to do their work. It's the research that we've done. Representative Willie here.
And Mr. Dewar, I mean, it just, you know, I'm not one of these experts on these things, but it just seems like you could create a pool that could be successful if you were maybe not to have Minnetonka or some of the other districts around the state. And then the beauty of it would be that you would have your plan up and running. And, you know, you might have had it during the last couple of years. So that's just my opinion. I don't know that we're going to get to anything beyond that at this point. But I was just wondering if, do you have a sense of where, you know, this has been vetoed twice? Do you sense that it's going to be... meet a different fate? And I was out of the room for a few minutes. I was detained, so you may have answered that. I was just wondering, do you have a sense of that?
Mr. Chair, Representative, no, I do not. We have worked with the governor's office over the last few years. We've made modifications over the last few years to meet with the governor's objections and his veto letters, and he's vetoed it. So I don't have an answer on whether he's going to do that.
Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Stewart. Representative Sanders? Seeing no comment from Representative Sanders, well, very briefly, you're the last comment, then we're going to vote on some amendments.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I did have a quick question, a couple quick ones. You know what the total liability would be of this pool?
Is that to Mr. Dewar?
Representative Hosh.
Representative Hosh, has Mr. Johansson.
Representative Sanders, Mr. Chair, if you look at the A4 amendment, it says that the commissioner must provide all aggregate claims data for coverage. That claims data is going to help establish premiums and liabilities. So, I mean, from what we say is fluid, because every year is going to be different, but we need that claims data.
Representative Sanders?
And that kind of leads to my next question. It doesn't sound like you've done any actuarial studies up to this point.
Mr. Johansson?
Mr. Chair, Representative Sanders, the state funded an actuarial study. As a matter of fact, it's the only actuarial study that's ever been done of all school employees. It was referred to as the Redmond Anders study. The report, I believe, was in January of 2004, but as time's passed, maybe it's 2003. I might be a little off. The study found that in fact the creation of a mandatory statewide pool is viable, and that in fact it would create stability and all of those things we talked about. But
thank you, Mr. Johansson. Are there other questions or concerns? Seeing none, is there Representative Sanders?
I just wanted to follow up with that. It just, you know, on the questions of cost and risk pool and all that, we didn't seem to have any answers whatsoever, and I just can't imagine a provider wanting to provide coverage when we don't actually know what the cost is or what the risk pool is, and I just feel like we're putting the cart before the horse in moving forward as is.
Thank you, Representative Sanders. Are there any amendments anyone desires to offer?
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Ellerson?
I'd like to offer the A5 amendment, Mr. Chairman.
The A5 amendment was offered. Want to speak to it briefly?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. What we've heard from the testifiers here today, but also we've heard from a number of the folks that have emailed, including the leadership of my school district, the union in my school district, as well as the teachers in my school district, is we've got a good plan. Don't make us buy into this bad pool. So, rather than throwing all kinds of uncertainty and cost into my school district, the two that I represent, if it is a good idea, which I do think that the using pools can be a good idea, then those that want to buy into this, and we've heard from several school districts that actually do believe they want to opt into this system, then rather than must, I think it should be may, so that those that do want to buy into the system, those that have emailed us and said, yes, I'm all for it, it's a good idea, they may join the system, but they don't have to. We've heard from a number of folks, especially up here tonight, from the Minnetonka School District in person, that this is a system that would be actually a model to take them backwards. And Mr. Chair, I appreciate the support and would appreciate a roll call.
Thank you, Representative Ellers. We've heard arguments on both sides of that issue. Roll call has been requested. Clerk, call the roll.
Atkins?
No.
Anderson?
Aye.
Anvil?
No.
Davids?
No.
Dabney?
Aye.
Fritz?
No.
Hoppe?
Aye.
Hosh?
No.
Johnson?
No.
Knuth? No. Louie?
Aye.
Morey? Murdoch? Sanders.
Aye.
Simon. Slocum.
No.
Tao.
Nope.
Zellers.
Aye. Motion does not prevail. 97. Next up.
Mr. Chair.
Are there any other amendments?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Anderson.
I've got an amendment. It's the A9 amendment.
The A9 amendment has been moved. Representative Anderson to the amendment.
Very briefly, Mr. Chair, this is the same amendment that I offered last year. Again, this is school districts for me, Hopkins and Wayzata School District. They are very opposed to making this mandatory. This gives them the option to opt in if they so choose into this insurance pool. Members, I just ask that you give them that opportunity rather than making it a ram down everybody's throat. At least give them the option to decide if this is the best thing for the teachers and the support staff.
Thank you, Representative Anderson.
And if I could have a roll call too, Mr. Chair.
Absolutely. seeing no other comments, clerk call roll, please.
Atkins?
No.
Anderson?
Aye.
Andrews?
No.
Davids?
No.
Dabney?
No.
Fritz?
No.
Hoppe?
Aye.
Hosh?
No.
Johnson?
No.
Knuth?
No.
Lilly?
Aye.
Mullery? Murdoch? Sanders.
Aye.
Simon. Slocum.
No.
Tao.
No.
Zellers.
Aye. Motion does not prevail. 10-6. There are other amendments?
Representative Zellers. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to offer the A-10 amendment.
To your amendment?
The District 279 is my home district of the Osseo Maple Grove School District, Mr. Chairman, and they have said, along with many other folks, I don't think we need to reiterate it here tonight, but this is on their behalf, again, not just the school district, the teachers, the parents, the union leadership, all of them included, said, please do not put us into the system where we will have to increase. Unfortunately, some of the folks testifying on behalf of the bill can't speak to the increases or decreases or savings, but my school district has said it will increase the amount that our teachers pay each month out of their paycheck. Mr. Chairman, I offer the amendment to allow them to choose to, whether or not they participate in this. They obviously will choose no, and I'd ask for a roll call, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Sellers. Seeing any other comments? Seeing none, clerk call the roll, please.
Atkins?
No.
Anderson?
Aye.
Anvil?
No.
Davids?
No.
Dabney?
No.
Fritz?
No.
Hoppe?
Aye.
Hosh?
No.
Johnson?
No.
Knuth?
No.
Lilly?
No.
Murdoch?
Aye.
Sanders? Simon. Slocum.
No.
Tell.
No.
Sellers.
Aye.
Motion does not prevail. 11-6. 11-5, I'm sorry. Representative Hoppe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to offer the A8 amendment.
To your amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and members, this is an amendment I offered last year to the bill. It's similar, at least it has a similar intent to the Zeller's amendment earlier. Different language, different program, but would let districts opt out of the mandatory program. And I think we know what the vote's going to be, but I think I also, I've never had an issue. I've gotten so many positive notes from teachers in my district. So I think I owe it to them to put forward this amendment. And, Mr. Chair, I'd like to ask for a roll call.
Thank you, Representative Hoppe. Roll call been requested. Clerk, call the roll.
Atkins.
No.
Anderson.
Aye.
Anzels.
No.
Davids.
No, thank you.
Dabney.
No problem.
Sure. Fritz.
No.
Hoppe.
Aye.
Hosh.
No.
Johnson.
No.
Knuth.
No.
Lilly.
Aye.
Mullery. Murdoch.
Aye.
Sanders.
Aye.
Simon. Slocum.
No.
Tal.
No.
Zellers.
Aye.
Motion does not prevail. 9-7. Are there other amendments to be offered?
Cool.
Representative Zeller.
Mr. Chairman, I'll offer the A7 amendment. And I honestly think, Mr. Chairman, in 6.5, 7 years down here, I don't think I've ever offered a study amendment before. Honestly. But based on the testimony we've heard here today, I don't know, and those of you who have school districts who've contacted you, but you've maybe not necessarily voted with their particular wishes, if you're going to submit them to this plan, if you're going to punish them with this plan, you'd better know what you're punishing them, what sentence you're going to hand down to them. We've heard tonight that we don't know what kind of premiums are going to have to be raised, how much the actual reserve buildup is going to be. We're not really sure what happens if the plan isn't able to pay them, although I'd say it comes back from the general fund. So we've got all kinds of questions that we've asked, and there's no answer, or an answer that's vague, or an answer that has flown in the face of what some of the other testifiers have given. So, Mr. Chair and members, the actuarial study will help us, again, if we're going to prescribe a plan to folks who are opposed to it, at least they should know what they're going to have to pay, and if the author of the bill or the testifiers who have been on here on his behalf haven't been able to give it to him, I think it's the one thing in government that we ought to, at least on good conscience, be able to tell the people who are going to have to pay this, here's what your premiums are going to go up. And, Mr. Chair, I ask for a roll call.
Thank you, Representative Zeller's other comments. Seeing none, clerk call the roll.
Atkins.
No.
Anderson.
Aye.
Anzels.
No.
Davids.
No.
Dabney.
Aye.
Fritz.
No.
Hoppe.
Aye.
Hosh.
No.
Johnson.
No.
Knuth.
No.
Lilly.
Aye.
Mullery. Murdoch.
Aye.
Sanders.
Aye.
Simon. Slocum.
No.
Tal.
No.
Zellers.
Aye.
Motion does not prevail. 9-7. Any other amendments anyone desires to be offered? Okay. Representative Hosh renews the motion that House File 866 as amended be recommended to pass and refer to the Committee on the Health and Human Services Policy Committee. Representative Hoppe.
Mr. Chair, to the bill, briefly, if we have a problem with health care in the state, if we have a problem with teachers, I'm not opposed to fixing it. I just don't like this way. I've never liked this way. I've never liked this bill. I think I've been pretty clear on that. I don't know why we want to punish some districts and bring everybody down to the same level. I would urge members to vote no, and Mr. Chair, I'd like to ask for a roll call on the bill.
Roll call has been requested. Representative Anfeltz has a comment. Chair has one brief comment, which is listening to all of the testimony. This is not a perfect product. It is clearly well-intended. My hope is that as it travels through this process that it will become more perfect and will take into account some of the comments and concerns that have been raised here today. Representative Anfeltz, you've got the final word.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And thank you for making the comment about it's not a perfect product. But as a member of this committee who represents seven of the most rural and small and financially fragile districts in the entire state, I can tell you, and I plead with you, to give this a chance. We hear a lot about Minnetonka, Wayzata, St. Paul, but the people from North Cooch, Indus, Lake of the Woods, and Nashua-Keewatin aren't here. But those teachers are important too, and those students are important. So I ask you to give this a chance and vote yes.
Thank you, Representative Anselt. Roll call having been requested, Representative Hosh renews his motion that House File 866 as amended be recommended to pass and refer to the Committee on Health and Human Services Policy. Clerk, call the roll, please.
Ekins.
Aye.
Anderson.
No.
Henzels.
Yes.
Davids.
Yes.
Dabney.
No.
Fritz.
Yes.
Hoppe.
No.
Hosh.
Yes.
Johnson.
Yes.
Canoe.
Yes.
Lilly.
No.
Mullery. Murdoch.
No.
Sanders.
No.
Simon. Slocum.
Yes.
Tell.
Yep.
Zellers.
No way. Motion prevails 9-7. Thank you, Representative Hosh. With that, folks, we stand adjourned.